A dancer's life. A questionable accident. The rebuilding of a new life. Rehabilitation. Reconciliation. Exploring the cultural definitions of artist. Dancer. Indeed, of human beings. All an integral part of this beautifully sensitive new book. The novel by well-known Valley author and journalist entitled The Art of Falling releases January 28th of 2014, and it expresses the unlimited possibilities that come with new beginnings. Critics have noted that it is a story of friendship and personal growth. Another reviewer commented this debut novel traces the aesthetics of movement and gently explores the shattering pain of despair. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, WDIY FM 88.1. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we are very honored to have with us today Catherine Kraft, a former dance teacher, choreographer, journalist for The Morning Call for 19 years, a leader in the dance and literary scene throughout the East Coast, and also development editor specializing in storytelling structure at writingpartner.com. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Kate.
It's interesting, we were talking about, we talked to Mary Lawler a week or so ago, whose book had been out, and we had the opportunity to read it and look at it, but this is a real newborn baby. I haven't had the pleasure of reading it, so when you walked into the studio tonight with a copy in your hand, it was very exciting. So we're close to the Eastern Arabian Bookstore. We'll have it in stock tomorrow?
Yes, they're hoping to.
Okay, all right. And we'll talk before we go tonight a little bit about signings and upcoming events, but just the title itself is intriguing to me. The Art of Falling. Could we kind of start with thinking about, I mean, you don't think of dance and movement as falling, and yet the book opens with a fall.
Yes, actually the book opens right after a fall.
Okay.
Penelope Sparrow wakes up in a Philadelphia hospital room, unable to move, and she's a 28-year-old dancer, and movement is her joy, her love, her sustenance, her passion, and she can't make a blessed thing happen with her body. Mm. You know, you can imagine that kind of fine-tuned, you know, instant lightning reflex and capabilities of a well-trained dancer's body, and she has nothing. So pretty soon she finds out that from the baker on the first floor of her building where she lives on the 14th floor that she had landed on the roof of his car. And everyone wants to know, what happened? How did you leave the 14th story and land on this car? Right. How did you survive? And that opens a question of a backstory thread that weaves throughout the book. But she's way more concerned with how on earth can she live if she can't move. And her slow, painful, effortful remobilization is the story that she wants to tell. So these two stories come together. And you say The Art of Falling may not have much to do with dance, but the disparity between being on that balcony and landing on top of that car, that distance from the height of her career to starting all over again, is the distance that she must reckon with throughout the entire novel. And it all kind of comes full circle at the end.
And it seems to be a journey of reconciliation with herself, or and because there's some question as to how she ended up on the top of that car and whether there was some possible self-harm or anger with self, body.
There's a lot of reconciliation that has to happen.
Yeah.
She was basically a dancer at war with her body.
Okay.
She blamed her body, the very body that was strong enough to help her survive this, what should have been a deadly fall, is that strength she damns because her hips were too wide, her thighs were too chunky. She just knew that she wasn't the ideal for the dance world, and she felt like that's why she was having trouble. And this war, if you think about a soul being at war with its vessel, no one can win that war. She will lose. And she has slowly imploded her relationships with her mother, her mentor, the choreographer who believed in her, her lover. And she fell all the way.
And she actually always beat herself down, did she not? She was insecure, basically.
Yes.
Even before.
We're talking about
because she was seeking perfection, and the perfection in dance is, as in any art form, is very difficult to be realized by the artist.
That's true. But if you think about dancers, they are in front of a mirror all the time. I mean, it's hard for any artist because we're very hard on ourselves, literary artists included. But you don't write a novel in front of a mirror. You don't sketch a drawing or design a building in front of a mirror. But you are constantly assessing. You're the vessel. You're the critic. You are the medium. You're everything in dance. And it's very tough for people to keep some sort of balance and perspective. And actually, it's Penelope Sparrow's first friends outside the dance world that helped give her that perspective and begin her healing.
And they would be, I didn't quite catch that. That's interesting that they would be from outside the dance world, and this would be a new experience for her. That's interesting. You know that world very deeply, of course, as a dancer and choreographer yourself. But I think there's parallels, as we were saying, for not only for artists, but this kind of in the culture, this stressing on women's body image, or even perfectionism, this kind of very artificial, just when we talk about photoshopping models and this kind of manipulated imagery of perfection and what that does to oneself, that you can't feel you can't obtain that.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping our society and our culture is moving in a good direction there, because at least a lot of these, the airbrushing and the photoshopping and all of that is being exposed. We see it on Facebook all the time. But there's going to be a really queer transition for a long time, just as with the women's liberation movement, where we believe our role is to raise the children and keep the home, but we're also pressured into having a career. There's going to be a queer transition of people who believe that that's the way the world should be, that we should accept one another and accept our the vessels that we were given as a birthright, you know, this body, this flesh, that we should accept it. Yet we've grown up in this era where we know, you know, what's expected and we know what is lauded. And I want to say that even though I was fascinated by the topic and I wrote this novel, I have zero answers. I just raised the questions.
Interesting.
But there is a true connection there between the expression of movement of a dancer and the expression now of the literary world, which you have now embraced. And when did you first begin to write?
Well, for me, the dance and the literary arts are at two ends of a continuum, because I started dancing first and choreographing, and then after college started working for the Morning Call as a dance critic. And if you think about that, or at least the way I thought about it, was to exchange movement for words. When I'm in the audience and I'm watching what's happening, I'm scribbling all over a page that I can't see because it's pitch black, and oftentimes the lines were all skewed and crossed over one another. And I actually very rarely referenced my notes, but I needed the act of translating the movement into the words, you know?
Yes.
And then with that action complete, I could go write. But it's funny, when I would leave Lehigh Valley dance performances, my ear was always attuned to what I was hearing in the lobby. And I can't tell you how many times I heard this quote. "So what did you think?" "Wow, that was really something." "Wasn't that something?" "That was something." You know, and I thought maybe my role could be to give them words.
Yes.
So they
yes.
can know how to discuss what just happened. Sometimes they're descriptive words. Sometimes there's a value attached, like a poorly executed move or a sweeping move or something like that. But just a way in.
Mm-hmm.
And because it is deeply felt. And I think they were genuine in saying it really was something. They just didn't know how to describe or put a word to that something. So I was already coming out of the movement, the pure movement world, where I found my artistic voice, ironically, and moving into the world of words. And then I remember that there are many people in Lehigh Valley who might be listening right now who remember me saying, I am a confirmed nonfiction writer because there are so many fascinating stories to tell in the world. Why would anyone ever need to make something up? Mm-hmm. Those words actually came out of my mouth. But, you know, in life as in story, pressures come to bear on us that create change.
Well, then what brought you to fiction? I mean, what made you feel that you need, that it was more fulfilling, or what you needed to do at the moment was to make a story? What brought you to that?
That was my husband's suicide in 1997 after a day-long standoff at our idyllic little farm in Berks County. You know, one day it's this beautiful place with horses and the wind rushing through the trees. It was autumn. It was one of those gorgeous days that makes you want to just bite into a crisp apple. And the next day, it's hell. It went from heaven to hell in 24 hours with this standoff. And I was already self-identifying as a writer. I'd been a critic for 15 years, and I knew that my healing would come through writing. This is how I order my thoughts. This is how I make sense of things. But a memoir, I don't know, I drafted a memoir because it was important for me to write everything down that happened. But I wasn't ready to shape it into a story. But story is very powerful, and I actually learned that Well, I've learned it my whole life long, but I remember an important incident in when the Columbine was at 99. Someone from the Lehigh Valley went out. I read that someone from a storyteller from here went out to Colorado to work with the kids because it's so powerful to be able to control the ending of the story.
Interesting.
So I thought, you know, I could write a story with greater hope and leave that behind for my kids, and that would require making something up. Although I've had a hopeful life, and I think my kids have turned out pretty well, but they were 8 and 10 at the time, and it was tough. They're both boys.
That's interesting. Did you feel that if you were, would choreography or dance at that moment have, it's a different way of storytelling, it wouldn't have served the same purpose of...
By that time, I had already stopped dancing for about 5 or 6 years. And while Martha Graham choreographed from a chair and well into her 90s, I wasn't made of that same stuff. Even though my maiden name was Graham, and I like to pretend we're related, but we're not. Door had closed. I was beyond that. So
good. Well, we are very excited about this book, about its coming January 28th, but people in our valley are getting kind of sneak previews because it's becoming available here before that actual release date. Incidentally, it is being released. I think you mentioned Moravian Bookshop.
There's a book signing coming up.
Yes, of course. And it is The Art of Falling is a sensitive study of a woman's choreographing her own recovery. There are many other characters in the piece, and when we come back, we want to ask you about some of those other characters that are central to the point of the book as well. And maybe if we're fortunate, you would read a little portion of The Art of Falling when we come back. We shall return momentarily after these salient messages. This is George and Kate on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, and we're chatting with Catherine Kraft. We'll be right back.
Join us for our Winter Blast 2014. WDIY's annual party is happening Saturday, February 1st at Miller Symphony Hall in Allentown. Tickets are available at wdiy.org. Winter Blast tickets include complimentary food, drinks, and the live rocking sounds of the Doughboys. Go to wdiy.org and get your tickets today.
program support, we thank Jenny Squali, 102 East 4th Street, Bethlehem, serving homemade Malaysian cuisine infused with spices and combined with other ingredients to reflect the various cultures in Malaysia. All food is made fresh. For hours, daily specials, and more information, 610-758-8088 or jennysquali.com.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. This is George Miller and Kate Scuffle, and we are chatting with Catherine Kraft, author of the new work of fiction, The Art of Falling, A Journey of a Woman and Her Restless Pursuit of Perfection. We all are, but this particular character is especially.
Yes.
And we were talking, too, a little bit about, I mean, that sense of perfectionism as a universal quality in the culture, but again, particularly with women and bodies. Before we came on the air, we were talking about how you don't go through a day, you were saying, without hearing women. That's the pattern of kind of mocking jokes or saying, if I could just get rid of this or if my arms just didn't do that. And it's kind of disparagement.
Mm-hmm.
That's a constant theme and really acceptable. I mean, people don't blink at it.
Yeah, and there are a lot of great books that treat it comedically. Mm. Jennifer Weiner's Good in Bed, Bridget Jones' Diary, but it's not always funny. I mean, I can see why women would just shrug their shoulders and say, what can you do but laugh? You know, and I think laughter is a great medicine, but it's a very serious issue as well. And the particular, I actually never talk about what my character looks like in the book.
I had read that in one of the I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Each reader to attribute what they think
she looks like.
She looks like, yeah. Because she suffers from a condition called body dysmorphia, where she looks in the mirror and she sees things that aren't necessarily true. You know, she's looking through a filter.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, eating disorders, which would be the extreme end of these kind of body image issues, and a line that my character feels that she's very careful not to cross because she's a dancer. She's seen what anorexia and bulimia look like, and she has come up with these parameters that keep her on the safe side. Interestingly enough, my first husband, who was an alcoholic, felt that he was not an alcoholic because he was a bar manager. He knows what alcoholism looks like. Mm-hmm. It's the guy who sits at the bar and drinks all night long and never leaves and has to stay in the hotel, or the bartender has to call a cab. He had all sorts of lines that define what alcoholism looked like, so he did not self-identify, right, because he stayed on the safe side of those lines. But that doesn't mean your life isn't imploding around you.
Yes, wow.
And how do the characters that she meets, the non-dance world folks, what are the qualities they bring to bear that help this catalyst for her, they serve as a catalyst for her?
The cast is pretty well orchestrated around their relationship to food.
Mm.
The man whose car she lands on is a baker. And so he uses food as comfort. He is a baker because of his fond memories of his grandmother's bread rising in the kitchen, and he wants to pass on those sweet memories, literally sweet, to other people. Her hospital roommate, Angela Reed, is in the end stages of cystic fibrosis, and chosen mainly because my character's 28 years, I wanted them the same age to show the disparity between a fighting spirit inside a frail body, which is Angela's, mm-hmm, versus the flagging spirit and very strong body that is Penelope's. What might these two characters have to offer, mm-hmm, offer one another? Penelope's mother is obese. And so Penelope has always desperately tried to keep her dance world separate from her mother. You know, never the two shall meet, because she's so fearful that the other dancers will see her as a smaller version of her mother rather than a larger version of them, which she would rather. There's her. There's the local dance critic whose sister suffered in a way that I suddenly feel I should not reveal. And
that's fine.
So there are, you know, all of the characters contribute to that conflict, as you said.
We know now a little bit about each of the characters. Would you be kind enough to read just a passage from your book?
Sure.
Good.
Here's the very opening section. My muscles still won't respond. It's been hours since they promised a doctor, but no one has come. All I can do is lie on this bed, wishing for some small twinge to tell me exactly what's wrong. My body, a still life with blankets. I'd settle for inching my foot back beneath the covers. I command my foot to flex, to point, to burrow beside its mate. It ignores me, as do my hands when I tell them to tend to the situation. Why has someone covered me so haphazardly? Or could it be that in my dreams I had somehow moved that foot? I will it to move again. Now it stays put. This standoff grows more frightening by the moment. If my focus weakens, I'll fall prey to larger, hungrier questions. Only motion can soothe me. Only sweat can wash away my fear. From somewhere to my right, I hear an old woman's crackling cough. My eyes look toward the sound, but I am denied even this small diversion. A flimsy curtain hides her. I close my eyes against this new reality. The bed rails, a constant beeping over my shoulder, and the device clamped to my index finger. In my mind, I replace the flimsy curtain with a stretch of burgundy velour and relax into its weight. Sink. Deep. I replay each sweep, rise, and dramatic dip of Dimitri's choreography. My muscles seek aspects of motion. That first impulse. The building momentum. Moments of suspension, and then, ah, sweet release. When the curtain rises, I will be born anew.
Wow, strong emotional, just in the very beginning, affecting us very much. Thank you.
That's The Art of Falling by Catherine Kraft.
And we saw you on YouTube, actually, and people can join in and listen and see you there as well as everywhere else. But I understand that the book had a different title at one point.
Yeah, that's been quite an evolution. When I first started pitching the book to agents, it was under the title The Girl Who Fell from the Sky, mm-hmm. which actually is based on an American Indian myth about the beginning of the universe, mm-hmm. a girl who's falling through the clouds. That title... I remember the agents telling me, no matter what happens with this book, keep that title. It's golden. Well, then Heidi Duro won the Barbara Kingsolver's award for Literature for Social Change, the Bellwether Prize, and came out with a book titled The Girl Who Fell from the Sky. So then it went through a couple other permutations. It was Dance of the Fallen Sparrow on that YouTube reading that you're talking about. And Source Books, who was publishing it, changed it to The Art of Falling. And they felt that title addressed more of the layers of what I was trying to accomplish in the book.
I would suggest people, there's a www.catherinekraft.com website that I think gave me a great sense of the background, the selections from the book, critics' responses, your kind of journey with the book, and also the work you do with mentoring and working with other writers, which is, has that been part of a reflection of your own journey through getting published and writing, wanting to reach out and guide?
You're an artist. You understand. There are many ways that we try to earn our keep as we ply our trade, and editing is a related service that's actually been in more demand now that so many people are self-publishing. Fewer editors are actually editing. They are acquiring books, and they are expecting that they are pretty darn well edited before they ever get to their desk. Mm-hmm. So sought a storytelling education, and that's what I ended up offering is these services.
Well, Catherine, we want to thank you very specially for weaving an eloquent book, an elegant novel. We're all looking forward to it. And it really shows what folks here in the Lehigh Valley can look forward to. Actually, the literary world, the authors and playwrights and poets that are here are really being very prolific, and we're so grateful for that. So we do thank you. We want to thank Neil Heaver, too, who is sitting in for Stevie Aronson, who's usually our technical director and keeping our radio voices silky and smoothie, and, of course, keeping our dance steps in sync with each other. Thanks, Neil. Again, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.